Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
Congratulations. On behalf of the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, and the schmoes know, you are now a member of the Jedi Alliance. May the Force be with you. Always.
Hello, Jedi Alliancers. Happy Life Day. Welcome to Jedi Alliance Episode 16. I'm Ken Napsuk, your host, and my normal co-pilot and co-host, Maud Garrett, is out still traveling the world. I have on good authority that she's coming back from Dagobah and trying to meet up with the Rebel fleet, and she'll join us shortly for the final attack on the second Death Star. But I am joined this week by two very capable Star Wars nerds who were here before the Jedi Alliance are making their return. Please welcome from Schmoes Know, Mark Ellis.
Thank you very much, Kenny, and from what I've seen on Instagram, Maud is in a very more tropical climate
yes.
than what Dagobah has to offer, at least what we've seen of Dagobah.
Yeah, she's on kind of an island version of Naboo, is what I keep saying. And then, of course, as always, our Jedi Alliance toy expert, Mike Black, has returned. Not necessarily talking about toys today, though he did make me jealous already with his Walgreens exclusive Boba Fett concept art Black Series figure.
Thanks to the guys at Walgreens near me who saved one for me.
I can't believe they sell that at Walgreens. That's incredible.
Yeah. Stay out of the Woolworths.
Like, it's famous for pharmacies not having the best toys on like December 24th when you need to get something for your niece or nephew. That is awesome.
You can get serious out of nowhere. Like all of a sudden they were like this, Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, all sorts of crazy
stuff.
You can
get a plastic shovel, a bucket, and a Boba Fett.
I know where I'm going on the way home.
And some RC Cola if you want to as well.
All the stuff you need to hide a murder and an action figure.
Perfect. Especially the RC Cola. First things first. We here at Jedi Alliance, you notice that there's, of course, been a grand transition. It's a very exciting transition to a bigger world with a Popcorn Talk Network. Now, this week only, the show will be available on the Schmoes Know Podcast YouTube channel and the Popcorn Talk Network YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/popcorntalk. Mark, you know a lot about this. This is an exciting new world in front of us.
Yes, this isn't the only reason I'm on the show, by the way, though.
I'm
here to talk Star Wars, too. But as a schmo, this is really exciting that anybody who is subscribed to the Schmoes Know Podcast Network, make sure you subscribe to the Popcorn Talk YouTube channel, because that's where you can find not only this show, but all the shows that we have that were under the Schmoes Know Podcast umbrella. Mm-hmm. We're just going over to the YouTube channel known as Popcorn Talk. Popcorn Talk, let it pop in your head.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have been tweeting us questions about it. What does it mean? What does it mean? It just means things are growing. Things are expanding. Kind of like Jabba after, episode one. Things are getting good. So also follow Popcorn Talk on Twitter at Popcorn Talk. Don't forget to follow us at Jedi Alliance SK. We have our Facebook page as well, Jedi Alliance. Our Instagram page, Jedi Alliance, and the Instagram fan page, Jedi Alliance fans. You were tweeting out or Instagramming and tweeting out all the social media stuff.
I had a land speeder crashing into Jabba the Hutt. And
not canon.
Kenny didn't take kindly to it. Salacious Crumb didn't seem to mind.
I noticed too, Mike, you brought back R2-D2 this time.
Yeah, I felt bad about last time because he didn't work. So I wanted to show that he actually is pretty rad.
If my young Padawan Maud was here, she'd be screaming and jumping for joy because that is working in its full power.
Last time he had a bad motivator, he's working now.
Uncle Owen!
I took him to Tachi's, got him all fixed up.
I love that that wasn't the first time the Jawa sold somebody a bill of goods. You know.
I like their response. Like, you know we're Jawas. You know what we do.
You don't come out of us and expect good deals. Yeah. We're like the Circuit City of the desert.
Jawas like are known for giving receipts.
They got a couple droids at Connectors, the Radio Shack of the desert. Already been a fun show. Of course, this is, by coincidence, on the day that we're taping, Monday the 17th, this is the anniversary of the Star Wars holiday special, Life Day.
Wow, the cartoon.
That is right. And since the Jedi Alliance here, we celebrate the greatest saga ever told. We wouldn't want to miss celebrating this, though we're going to probably do it in a little more detail later in the year, closer to Christmas.
Now, that's the special that was all in Wookiee-ese, correct? It was basically, like, yeah, on Chewbacca's home planet.
The plot had to do, now I haven't seen it in full, I've seen it in parts.
I've never seen any of it. I've only been aware, but the only thing I know about the Star Wars Christmas special, or the holiday special, is that it was pretty brutal, apparently, to watch if you're a Star Wars fan, and it was the introduction of a young man named Boba Fett.
Absolutely, probably the best thing to come out of
His sequence was animated, and that sequence actually kicks ass. It's really worth checking out.
Yeah.
Because all the stars did their own voices for it, and it's all this short animated story about Boba Fett, so it's pretty great. The rest of the special takes place on Kashyyyk, you know, Chewbacca's own planet. It's in Wookiee, no subtitles. However, there are, like, other characters, but this is the 70s.
Yeah.
B. Arthur gets to sing a song in it to give you an idea.
B. Arthur gets to sing a song. She's the owner of the Mos Eisley Cantina, and it's closing for business.
I knew the Golden Girls had something to do.
And she's singing this song about so long, friends, and have a good time. Like, it's Harvey Korman's in it. Diane Carroll is in it, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is she the one that Chewbacca's, like, father or grandfather, like, Tarful the Wookiee or something? Someone out there, please correct me with the right name. But he puts
Someone
on
will.
These 3D kind of virtual reality glasses and kind of basically goes into Chewbacca or Wookiee porn.
Yeah, it's
with
like
this
Demolition
dancer.
Man type Wookiee sex.
It's and he's like freaking out, and he's got like the 3D. Wow! And that aired on TV.
You know, CBS. As a Star Wars fan,
if he had a weird Wookiee stroke while that was happening, how bad would that be?
That might be the last thing I want to see before I die. Like, if I'm on my deathbed and I'm just not quite making the transition fast enough, I'm like, go ahead and put on the Christmas special. That'll do it.
Yeah, the basic plot revolves around the Wookiees celebrate something called Life Day, and they got to get Chewie back to celebrate Life Day. So the family is calling to the characters. So you got like Han appears. Like Harrison's just like, dear God, I signed on for what? I'm getting Chewie back for Life Day. Oh God, I hope I'm 40 years and I'm not doing this still.
He's in full on apocalypse now, Harrison Ford mode.
I think Leia sings a song.
Leia
if I remember
sings.
Correct.
Oh, I'd better see that.
The Life Day song, which is of course set to the lyrics of the Star Wars theme.
Mm-hmm.
I'd much rather have Bill Murray's version, but she does that, and then of course Mark Hamill to round out the roundup of this. Mark Hamill appears with more makeup than RuPaul on a parade day.
But this is pre-car accident, though, because it was 78, right?
I believe
right?
it was pre-car accident.
This might have been the day of. He might have, like, gone to this shooting, got loaded up on eggnog, and then took off.
Yeah.
You know?
He has more eyeliner on it than like, it's you've got to see that part.
Those wampa paws, when they hit you, you got to pancake that makeup.
Yeah. So, of course, we'll I'm sure at some point when Mod comes back, we'll celebrate this, go a little bit more in depth. There's a website called WrestleCrap, which celebrates the worst in pro wrestling, and I think they just took it down. But every year, they induct bad things from pro wrestling, but every year they do some classic ones, and they inducted the holiday special, and they broke it down. They had clips and everything, and it's.
I like that it has nothing to do with wrestling, and they were still like, no
this is
has
so
to go
bad
in.
This has to go into it. So,
this is responsible for CM Punk happening.
Yeah, this is it.
He wouldn't exist without this special.
Happy Life Day out there. In Jedi Alliance fandom. Now, since both of you have been on the show before, we're not going to go into the five most important questions. We don't need to. Yep. We know that you root for Luke Skywalker, and you do the best impersonation of the guy with 12 death sentences.
He doesn't like you. I would do that to Ellis at the Comedy Store all the time. And I meant it.
and it's very similar. Comedy
Whatever
Store.
Whatever comic I was next to really didn't like him. You better watch yourself.
With Simone, Steve Simone, Panda Baba, just sitting there like, oh, we're gonna hang.
Yeah, not really trying to start trouble, but he'd get his arm chopped off anyway.
Yeah, luckily Argus Hamilton would show up with a lightsaber and protect me.
Argus wearing the same makeup that Luke wore in the holiday special. So we're going to dive into a couple things on today's show. This is going to be a fun show. If you can tell already, we got high energy. We love this here. We're going to go into our favorite questions and plot holes in the Star Wars saga. Now, I want to make sure it's known this is not... We're not nitpicking. We're not attacking. This is part of the fun of being a Star Wars fan.
This is done out of love.
Yes. It's the conversations we started to have on the playground in 1983. when you're growing up and you're like, hey, but wait a minute. I got, well, how did it? That's just part of the fun of being a Star
It's a
Wars
celebration,
fan.
Yeah. I mean, also, you know, we all have a comedic background of some point, so we like to poke fun at the things we love the most. So when we're doing this, we're not making fun of Star Wars. We're laughing with Star Wars, not at Star Wars. So
I'm sure though Star Wars is unaware that we're laughing at all.
And we just crapped on the holiday special for the first 5 minutes. So,
by the way, I do enjoy that you wore your George Lucas special plush shirt here today.
We both did. I wear what he wears out in the yard.
That's him writing the prequels under a tree near a creek somewhere in Skywalker Ranch. This is him actually interacting with, okay, no, when you're on Bespin, we need smoke to come up here.
The good George.
How do I get the kids involved in this one?
So to dive in here, I'll start with the first one. Because it was something I was watching A New Hope Episode 4, or as I called it as a kid, Star Wars. I was watching A New Hope not too long ago, maybe just 2 weeks ago before one of the shows, and something popped in my head, and then someone put it on our YouTube page as well, had the same question I did, and I apologize, I don't have the name up in front of me, but I propose it to you guys. In New Hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi has these brown rags on. He's got a hood. He makes a great Krat Dragon sound, but he's kind of living in the desert. We notice that everyone else on Tatooine kind of has the same garb. Uncle Owen's dressed in the same kind of layered sort of, thing. Come to find out years later, they were all either dressed like Jedis or Luke or George decided that's what Jedis wore, even though everyone on Tatooine had the same thing. Is that a plot hole? What do we do? Where do we go?
No, that's not a plot hole. I think that's you really watching that movie way too intently. Because I think that with any sort of fashion trend, you know, the really cool people, the Jedi, right? Or, you know, whatever the cool people are wearing, everybody else is going to start wearing that kind of thing.
That's very true.
Yeah. So like when I was a kid, everybody had Miami Heat starter jackets. And I was like, well, I got to get a Miami Heat starter jacket. So I guess, or a hypercolor shirt. I'm like, well, I got to get a hypercolor shirt. And so I think that's what Uncle Owen did, because at the end of Revenge of the Sith, when Obi-Wan drops off the kids to Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, they see Obi-Wan Kenobi. They're like, hey, you hear that Obi-Wan guy? He's got a lightsaber. Look at what he's wearing. Oh, that's awesome. I hope they sell it at our local Tashi's power station. And so then he went and picked up some power converters and some Jedi robes.
So you think Obi-Wan changed the fashion sense on Tatooine over the 18 years living in a Adobe by himself?
Well, he was definitely the coolest guy there.
Sure.
Like, it's a desert, you know. If you moved to Baker today, you would be the coolest guy in Baker, and they'd be like, what is he wearing? Where do we get that? You know?
It's not the worst idea I've ever heard. Three of us moving to Baker and really getting some things done.
Really taking over that Arby's thing.
But yeah, I remember, like, this is so ridiculous, but Samurai would shave the top of their head so that their helmet would stick, so that they wouldn't have to worry about it moving and stuff. And other people in the village would be like, those guys are so cool. I got to shave my head like that. It's the worst haircut ever, like in the history of mankind. But people wanted it just because the samurai were
really shows you the level of intelligence that we're dealing with. Because I referenced the Miami Heat starter jackets from 1993, and Mike's talking about ancient samurai.
He's talking about feudal Japan, and you're talking
about the samurai and the Jedi kind of fit.
The Jedi Bendu, as Lucas called him in the first drafts of the script. Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely some ties there. Yeah. So okay, I was just wondering, because at the time as a kid, you just accepted, well, that's what Obi-Wan was wearing. He was on the desert. He was hiding out. He had these comfortable robes. He could hide from a sandstorm. Uncle Owen had a similar thing. Come to find out, Phantom Menace, Qui-Gon and young Obi-Wan wearing the same thing.
Yeah.
But that was the other thing, too.
It's like a karate
had
gi.
A samurai sort of look. Yeah, the karate gi.
Yeah.
And you see that Vader has his own version of that. It's more evil, and it has like S&M stuff too.
Yeah.
And like some stuff from Radio Shack. But like for the most part, it's the same sort of duds.
And the Emperor has a robe too. Yeah. I mean, look, people want to be comfortable. The fact that they all dress like a late in life Al Davis doesn't bother them. You should wear loose clothing if you're about to wield a lightsaber.
A galaxy far, far away has embraced the Snuggie far more than we have. You
know? I absolutely would all be on board award for dressing like that. If we could start that trend. Yeah,
but if you also look at early Lucas sketches of these characters, I mean, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi and a lot of those other guys have something like that kind of garb on them already. So I don't think it was by accident that he just was like, oh, you know what? Alec Guinness is really old and he doesn't want to wear anything tight fitting, so let's just give him some robes. I think that that was a calculated decision.
The follow up, then I'll pitch it to you guys from some of your plot holes then, is Obi-Wan goes into hiding for 18 years or so,
sure,
wearing the exact same outfit he was last seen in by anybody.
Yeah.
So do you think on Tatooine they're kind of like, oh, you're looking for Obi-Wan? Well, that's him, right? He showed up like that 18 years ago with the lightsaber. That's got to be the guy, right? No, he didn't change his clothes at all, haircut, nothing.
You can smell him from here. He's been wearing the same clothes since. Yeah.
He's the drunk. He goes into bars and chops people's arms off, no matter where he is.
But if you look at Obi-Wan Kenobi through the prism of being a superhero, which he is, then yeah, every superhero has their stuff that they wear out in public. You know, like, I don't know how many different, you know, Batman is just a spoiled rich kid, so he has tons of costumes. I don't know if Peter Parker had a bunch of different Spidey outfits. He probably just had the one.
Look, if they had released a Obi-Wan in Sunday gardening clothes figure, we would have probably bought it as well.
See, I get what you're saying, but I think he moved back to Tatooine. I don't think he put out a press release saying, hey, everyone, I'm coming back to Tatooine. I think he just moved there quietly, and like, didn't tell anyone he was living there.
I'm not going to the
probably
mall.
Probably had food delivered and stuff, you know.
I'm just going to get a bunch of questions about the Jedi. I'm not going out.
Yeah.
He probably had one guy from Pink Dot that would deliver to him that he knew wouldn't ask him any questions.
Some kind of Meals on Wheels program with the Jawas.
Here's an extra 5 credits. Don't tell anyone I'm here. And they're like, whatever, old crazy man.
This guy keeps waving his hand in front of us.
What you don't know is that before he gave the Luke,
you
the,
don't
the,
need 20%.
He gave every delivery, pizza delivery guy, he told them, you must learn the ways of the Force. And it just happened to work on Luke and didn't work on anybody else.
You don't want to sell me pizza. I don't want to sell you pizza. All right, so that's my plot hole to submit to the group. I'm sure you guys have some. Ellis, jump in.
Yeah, I got a tiny one and I got a big one. The big one isn't really a, it's not so much a plot hole, it's just kind of a weird feeling that I get now when I watch A New Hope, is that Alderaan got blown up.
Yeah.
And, you know, 30 minutes later, we're having a medal ceremony. Nobody really seems that upset. And I'm thinking about the whole medal ceremony, and initially I'm thinking, nobody talks during the medal ceremony. Nobody gives a speech. There's not one guy that could be like, we'd like to thank Luke Skywalker. Nah, we're just going to throw medals on him, and we're never going to put your name out there. What really upsets me about the medal ceremony is that Wedge Antilles does not get honored. The only other guy to survive the original trilogy flying an X-Wing that is not named Skywalker gets out of that thing alive, and we give Chewbacca a medal?
No, Chewbacca didn't get a medal either.
Yeah, he was too tall. He just had a sit.
Chewbacca got to walk. He got to walk.
He did get to walk.
Did Dennis Lawson's character not have enough credits to graduate with the rest of his class? Like, get that guy on the stage. Without him flying down that trench with Luke, Luke does not blow up the Death Star.
I agree with you here, too. I mean, Wedge is so key to the story overall, especially the next two movies that follow. But, you know, he couldn't lock it down. He had to leave. He's like, I can't stay with you. So maybe they were like, way to go.
Oh, okay.
B plus for effort.
So we're going to reward Han, who just took off and ditched us, then decided, I guess I'll be the hero.
They're like, wussies don't get medals. We're sorry.
I do agree with the thing about the award ceremony. That video that just went viral about a month ago of removing all the soundtrack from the award ceremony. If you've seen that, it's probably one of the best things out there, because all it is uncomfortable coughing, shuffling of feet.
The droid. Then Chewbacca growling for no good reason.
R2's moving, and that's all you hear in the chamber. No one's talking. They're just smiling at each other.
Yeah.
It's odd as some of my first dates.
Thank God for John Williams and the London Symphony Orchestra.
What's your second one there?
After the trash compactor, and this is a question that I'll pose to the group, after they get out of the trash compactor, when they're still kind of dressed up as the stormtroopers, and then the next time we see them, it's like they're all freshly showered and they have their original clothes back. I'm like, did they put them in a purse? Did somebody have a bag like that? Particularly Princess Leia, because she's all crappy. And then all of a sudden she gets out of the trash compactor and she just looks kind of glowing again. So I'm thinking, like, is there a laundry facility on the Death Star? Because a lot of those stormtroopers are working a lot of hours. So sometimes it's like when you go to the Fox lot, they have a dry cleaner on site.
Right.
So you can drop off your clothes. And I'm thinking maybe that they just dropped off the clothes before they went to cell block 1138.
Well, the best part of that is, yeah, they, you know, Luke's wet, his hair's wet, everything, then he's fine, then he's perfectly coiffed.
But
so
it's not wet with like drippy goo from the trash compactor. Yeah. It's wet like he just, you know, got out of a Pert Plus commercial.
Yeah, I like that Mike's now starting. He's just going to play with toys.
No. This goes to my theory, but these guys don't have it. The regular stormtroopers have that little case on the back, that cylindrical cylinder on the back.
It looks like what Saint Bernard would wear when he's saving people in the Alps.
That's where I imagine they keep their clothes for when they're off.
They're unmentionable. Okay. All right. No, good. This is good to know. I mean, again, I'm not just trying to attack my favorite trilogy. No, I'm asking these questions, and now I feel like it was sufficiently answered.
We got to have the key parts of movies, but I would have loved like Obi-Wan and Luke aboard the Falcon and like, hey, where's your facilities? Han's like, oh, down the corner, go past the sabacc table, and then, just get it there. I like it, but that's part of the fun, and that's what Kevin Smith did so well in Clerks, talking about the guys who are just hardworking Imperials on the Death Star.
They're just union guys.
They're just contractors, and now they're dead. Because they
knew what they were getting into.
Yeah, that's true. These rebels, which technically are a terrorist organization, who are attacking these people just working. Really want to break into
it. It's like you getting a job on the Gaza Strip. It's like you're bound to run into some trouble.
I'm going to sign a waiver here.
The money's really good. Well, I bet it is. Yeah. It should be.
Starbucks better give us health benefits. We're going to open one on the Gaza Strip.
But for me, it's, and I'll pose this to the group too. If you're Jabba the Hutt, which is already, I apologize for making you think about that for a moment, but if you're Jabba the Hutt, the most ruthless guy on Tatooine, as far as you know, why would you send Greedo to do anything? He's terrible. And this is like not a Han shot first thing, because no matter how you slice it, he was terrible.
He was.
Like, if he got that shot, point blank range, horrible. If he didn't get that shot, still just an idiot. So why would you send him to do anything unless, and this is my personal theory on it, Greedo had pissed you off somehow and you wanted him dead.
You wanted it?
Yeah.
Oh, so you think Greedo and him had maybe a business deal that went south, and Jabba's like, all right, just do this favor for me, then we're square, because he knew.
He knew Solo would kill him, and Solo still owes him the money, but he got like a free kill. Like, he didn't have to send an assassin to kill Greedo. He's just like, I get rid of Greedo and I get my message out there to Han.
Because I think he liked Han.
Yeah.
I think it was one of his favorite scoundrels, you know?
Yeah.
Han, my boy. Han, my boy. Yeah. Like, you know?
Who, Han?
Jabba. I think he seemed really
liked
him.
If you go by the cutscene, it seemed like they were old pals.
By the time we get to Return of the Jedi, though, Jabba, I mean, he loves having that. He looks like a kid getting the Millennium Falcon for Christmas when he gets Han Solo in carbonite. Yeah. He loves having that in his sports bar.
Because that's the best of both worlds. He didn't kill him, but he's got him all jacked up and stuck on his wall as an ornament, you know.
So I think Jabba probably made a bunch of calls to a lot of bounty hunters, and they're all like, dude, I didn't put in avails for today. And it's like, oh, well, we know that Han's here today, so just I'll send the local guy to do it. I think it's a lot of the same thing because the Empire ran into the same trouble. In Empire Strikes Back, the Empire had a casting call of bounty hunters, and everybody showed up, and Darth Vader's just giving him a pep talk, like it's a pregame speech. Like, everybody go out there and go get Han Solo, particularly Bosk, who didn't even wear shoes to the job interview. This is the biggest interview you're like, this is the Galactic Empire, and you're not even going to put on boots.
And there's Dengar, who clearly had his ass handed to him at his last job. He's got bandages all over. It's like, clearly he shouldn't be up and about.
Dengar.
Major head injuries.
If they give you maternity leave, they should give you some sort of a couple of weeks off for the burns you incurred on your last mission.
I always thought, based on Dengar's outfit, it was kind of stormtrooper-esque with the bandage. That he was just like some drunk stormtrooper that got kicked out of the academy, and they just sit around the bar like, I was good in class. I'll kill that guy for you. What do you need?
Yeah, bounty hunter sounded cooler than mall security.
I'm a bounty hunter.
Yeah, he's the local guy who he had a great game his senior year of football, and he never forgot it. The rest of the town did, but he kept holding on.
Here's one of the things that Lucas is, I love it because it seems like sometimes he didn't remember what he wrote and what he set up and some of the stuff. And it's, again, I always go back to the end of Return of the Jedi, no matter which version, again, you slice it, whether it's old Anakin or new Anakin. Mm-hmm. There's no real mention of Yoda coming up in Star Wars until the, prequels filled out, but it was all, you know, Obi-Wan trained Darth, and Obi-Wan is here with Luke, and yeah, then you go find Yoda, and Yoda kind of reveals some stuff, but you go back to New Hope, it doesn't seem that Darth knew of Yoda's existence. We know that's wrong.
Yeah.
But at the end of Jedi, I was wondering why Darth didn't just look down and go, who's this? Who's this little thing? Because you don't mention it. They don't mention. Tarkin's not like, oh, Obi-Wan's there. You don't think Yoda's with him, right?
Well, that plays into a bigger question that I have, is that everybody just sorts to, they kind of accept the Force more and more and more as the trilogy goes on. But I think a lot of that is probably due to the fact that at the end of A New Hope, Luke switches off his targeting computer.
Yeah.
And they're right. Like, Luke, you switch off your targeting computer. What's wrong? And he's like, nothing. I'm all right. And then nobody's like, okay, well, go ahead and turn that back on, because this is kind of a big shot you're about to shoot. And then he makes it without the targeting computer. And then I think a lot of people started to warm up to the concept of
the Force.
Yeah. And then everybody else is like, you know what? I think this is real.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't answer your question.
No, but it was a great point.
Well, thank you.
Now, I think going off of what you said,
yeah,
as far as everyone knew, all the Jedi had died.
Right.
You know, like the general public, they all thought, the Jedi are dead.
Yoda's walking on a cane in the prequels.
Right.
Yeah, whatever they believed in, it clearly didn't work out. It's like if all the guys who read The Secret died, you know, it'd be like, well, I'm not going to read that. It's obviously not
all eight of them
work out.
Yeah.
But then if one guy came back and single-handedly won the Super Bowl reading The Secret, a lot more people would be like, oh, maybe that they weren't
maybe
full
that's
of it.
Valuable.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe that.
Okay.
Which is what should happen with Scientology. Ooh, in about 3 months now. But, get ready, kids.
But also, you said about, you know, he didn't know who Yoda was or whatever. Did they mention the Emperor by name in A New Hope?
No, at any point? No, there's
so
no Emperor.
So both of the, like, ultimate good and ultimate bad guys aren't actually
But they do mention the Emperor. They don't say Palpatine or anything. They do say the Emperor will, you know, the line's escaping me. JT, okay. Help me.
At what point? Because I'll get the line if you tell me the scene.
Early on, when Tarkin and Vader, before the first choke,
yeah,
when Vader's still Tarkin's lapdog, they come in. The Emperor will maintain control of the bureaucracy.
But you know what else, though? Okay. What else happens, going off of that conversation? They agree that there's an Emperor,
yeah,
but I don't think they know he's a Sith.
Because they
say Vader's the last of his religion and all that stuff, and they're making fun of him. They wouldn't do that if they knew that the Emperor was, you know.
Yeah, and again, and that speaks to my previous point, is that the Empire's not going to make fun of this ancient religion once it got two proton torpedoes into their tiny little exhaust port.
Yeah.
Now the Empire's like, okay, Vader, we're sorry, it's real, our bad. Let's regroup, let's send out some probe droids, let's find these guys.
What am I, we talk about, this is questions and plot holes, this is more of a question. Do you think the entire Star Wars series is really about a young boy, Annie, just trying to get his droid 3PO back?
I
think that's what Terminator 2 was about.
No, I think that it's more the heart and the desire, the will of R2-D2. Is what the entire trilogy, or the entire six films, is really about. Because R2-D2 has the most, even one of the biggest plot holes in any of those, is that R2-D2 isn't a good waiter at Jabba's Palace in Return of the Jedi. Because anything that droid decides to do, he's going to be great at.
Great.
Okay?
Yeah.
So he was either sandbagging it, or that's just crap that they should have gotten out of the movie, because he would have been the best. He would have gotten the most tips
that's
at
good.
That palace.
That's an excellent
R2
point.
R2 could make a hell of an old-fashioned, if anyone can.
I just always wondered, because, you know, once Phantom Menace hits, and here's Annie building his little droid, C-3PO, at some point in Empire, when C-3PO's running on the back of Chewbacca, wouldn't have Vader been like, hey, come back here.
And
come back here.
C-3PO was not in the scene when Han runs into Darth Vader when they sit down at dinner, right?
No,
because he was already dealing with those little pig guys.
Yeah, the Ugnaughts got him.
Which is, by the way, one of my favorite scenes in any Star Wars movie is when Han sees Darth Vader, and you just see something click in Han. He's like, I've heard of this guy, and he's not good news. And he takes out the gun, and I just love that showdown between them.
It is one of the rare moments of crossover between characters not normally associated with each other.
And when he pulls the gun, it's like, you know you're not going to win this fight. Right. Like, even before you draw. Yeah. But it's like, what other choice do you have but to at least give it a shot? And I love that about him.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That said so much about him as a character that it's like, so probably not going to win.
Once again, Han shot first in that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
There wasn't, like, a weird lightsaber that missed.
Which, in that world, is the right thing to do. Yeah. Like, if you live in the Star Wars universe, just shoot first. Chances are you're doing the right thing.
You imagine, you like, know? 5 minutes before they came in to that dinner, like Boba Fett and Darth Vader, like, look, they might be nice, okay? So yeah, don't be an ass right away. They might sit down, we might have a pleasant meal and talk about some
you
things.
You just picture Vader the entire time sitting there, food, waiting, just...
and then I'll say this cool thing.
Yeah.
And then,
any moment now.
He's working on his line. He's like, we would love for you to join us? No, that's not... No,
what's
love's
better
too
than
strong
we would
a word.
Love?
We would honor.
We would be honored.
We would be honored.
We would be honored.
Boba Fett comes in, we'd be honored. That's a good
yes.
one. Let me
Ooh,
make
I like that.
Fan.
I like that.
It's what I think Robot Chicken has done so well with the Star Wars universe, is just really getting into those
Oh,
moments.
Yeah.
And then, you know, on the other side of the door, they were like, well, if they offer us seafood, we're just going to have to eat it, but I don't like it, but just be polite.
I'm a picky
just,
eater. I have my blaster with me.
Any other questions and plot holes from you boys?
No, I think that's it for me. I mean, the prequels raise a lot of questions that I haven't seen them enough to really feel like I'm confident in asking.
Well, like what you were asking about Anakin and his droid. What I you remember, like, after episode one came out, you still kind of were like, well, this could be salvaged in the next two.
Right.
And you were like, there's other things that could happen. I remember thinking when I saw Jar Jar, I hated that character instantly. I just couldn't stand it.
As did society.
And, like, and it wasn't like a lot of people, it was a slow build for me. I was like, no. Like I said, no, verbally.
The first
when I saw him, I was like, no.
Was it like, no?
It was by the first, squeeze me, squeeze. Yeah. I'm out. I'm out.
I was like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I thought, this is going to be so sweet that he's got, like, all these kids watching this movie, and he's got this stupid character that they love and adults hate. When he fully turns, and that's the last semblance of his childhood, and he slices him in half to start off episode three, I'm going to love that moment so much, and it never happened.
That's great. Well, there's a lot more. Sorry, I that picture of that cosplayer who goes around. It's I think a few of them now, but there was the original guy who has the plate of Jar Jar's head.
Yeah,
and he's a stormtrooper.
Oh, that's great.
And a cook gear. There's a lot of questions and plot holes now. We're just scratching the surface, celebrating here on the Jedi Alliance. But out there, put on our Facebook page, Jedi Alliance. Go and put your own questions and plot holes. Do it on YouTube as well. We'll answer them. We'll get back. We could spend a lot of time talking about it. We do want to move on to other things, but that is the best thing about being a Star Wars fan, is having these conversations.
I love this stuff. I'm for this.
Wondering, hey, where does the Empire get their toiletries from? What do they shoot those in on a X-Wing? What are they, a TIE fighter? What do they got? Because Maude is out of town, we're not going to be doing news this week. I just don't want to step on her territory. That is Queen Amidala's section, and we did a lot of news last week. There are some news, though, about possible leaks on the Star Wars Episode 7 teaser trailer. I, for one, I don't want to read it. You?
There's some rumors going around that if you want to check them out, you can go to our website, schmozno.com, and read the story. We always like putting up news for you guys to click on, because if you're interested in that and you do want to take that plunge, go ahead. For me, even more so than hearing story facts about what Episode 7 might pertain to, I don't want to know anything about the teaser trailer. I want to keep those 2 minutes pure.
Mike? Yeah, I feel the same way. I want to go into this as pure as I can, because I didn't with the prequels, and I regretted it, you know.
Yeah, well, plus in this day and age, movies are just, by the time they come out, you know everything. You've seen 14 trailers that are official and released, but then also all the news sites, and it's kind of our business over in Schmoes No Land to kind of check on this stuff and report on it. I'm trying to stay out of the Star Wars Episode 7 stuff, and you know, and a lot of you out there tweet or Facebook me messages with, hey, have you seen this plot thing? And if I don't respond, that's why. I don't even want to click on them.
Yeah,
I want to sneak in to meet Joe Black and find out that they put it right. Into the woods, we're thinking.
Into the woods is what I'm putting my money on. Yeah.
and see it for the first time. Like you said, we had a pre-meeting there over some hot dogs mm-hmm. there, Mr. Ellis, and you said it's going to be good regardless of what it is. I don't want to spoil it.
I don't even more than spoiling it, I just don't want to speculate on what is going to be shown or what's not going to be shown, because inevitably that's just going to skew you when you're actually watching it. Like, I just want to go watch this thing and just have 2 minutes of just pure feeling like a kid. I'm going to weep as soon as I hear the music. I'm just going to, like, tears are... I almost cried driving here because I was thinking about what it's going to be like when I watch the trailer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So do you think they'll kill Jar Jar in this one?
I might. If they open with that, I would be okay.
If that was the movie, just the crawl, credits, or the score, Jar Jar's killed, end credits, that's it.
All you'd hear in the theater, they got my letter! I did it!
A young Jedi named Mike Black.
We're so close. We're just about a year away from all of our questions being answered.
Yeah, I know.
Now we're going to do Duel of the Fates. It is, of course, our weekly Star Wars debate segment where we take two things from the Star Wars universe and pit them against each other. Now, last week, to recap, we had an interesting one where I said, would you rather have a beer in the Mos Eisley or a drink in the Mos Eisley Cantina or buy Death Sticks on the Coruscant Bar? Basically meaning, which bar would you run and hang out at? Quickly, guys, where would you go?
As much as I like Mos Eisley Cantina, it seemed like there were hotter women on Coruscant, so that's where I would go.
For the same reason, that's why I'm going to Mos Eisley, because it's a place you can hang out, have a beer, relax, be yourself, listen to some nice jazz. It's not like a dance club. Like, that's what it looked like. Like, Death Sticks to me looked like one of those, you know, foo-foo, shishi, Highwood bars where it's going to take you an hour just to get into the door. Mos Eisley, you can just walk in, have a beer, watch the game.
I agree that it's like a local pub, but I ended up going with the bar on Coruscant just because it looked to me like a cosmic Dave and Buster's.
Yeah,
it just looked like
exactly.
Stuff
I was
going
like,
on.
I can handle this scene. Yeah, it's not too crazy. Even if an assassin's trying to kill you, she's pretty cute too.
Right.
So it's
right. until she changes because she's a changeloid.
Oh, I wouldn't have seen that though. She wouldn't have shown me that unless she died. So I'm cool with it.
You know when that happens. So we put it to you guys out there, and it was close. So this week I actually did my homework. Last week I took for granted that Maude does this every week, and I had to count them up myself today, and it was a rough count, but in a close one. Closer than I expected, Mos Eisley did win 34-21 in Coruscant. We had some people who didn't necessarily vote because they didn't want to choose, but it's close. I would have thought it more Mos Eisley just because the old trilogy connection.
Because the trilogy, that movie's better than the one where the Death Sticks are in, so yeah.
But I like that you fans played along with us and kind of took yourself out of what you thought of the movie and put yourself in the universe and a lot
and
of
I like that there are fans that are so passionate that they didn't choose. They were like, too hard.
I can't commit to one thing for the rest of my life.
I'm going to the general store in the Ewok Village.
I'm going to feel like a real douche on Friday night when I go out drinking with my droid buddies. And I'm like, no, you got to go to this great place on Mos Eisley. And I'm like, but you guys got to wait outside. Well, sorry about that.
That's a great point. We had some people choose Coruscant and Mos Eisley and left some comments. Peter Herf, what a great name to be a Star Wars fan.
Yeah,
you're close to being
scruffy looking Peter Herf.
Peter Herf said, got to do the bar on Coruscant. I don't think anyone in the cantina likes each other. It's a place where spices are sold, bounty hunters take contracts, and droid racism is rampant. The bar on Coruscant is a hybrid of a Euro disco bar and an American sports bar. There's games, drinks, upbeat music, beautiful Twi'leks, and patrons from every stretch of the galaxy, not just the outer rim.
That scruffy looking nerve herder just sold me.
Good point. Some cantina supporters. Wyatt Olson said, definitely the cantina. Sure, the Coruscant bar is posher, but those Death Sticks are brutal, not to mention the great musical talents of Fergan Dan and the model nodes. You can even find a pilot to get where you need to go. Only downside is some people don't like you. Billy says, got to go to the cantina. At 32 years old, I'm past the club scene. Pour me a drink and let me chill at the corner table.
See, that's
with my
how
rebel
I felt.
Friends.
Yeah.
Sean Thurston says, a stiff drink and a bar fight at the Mos Eisley Cantina sounds like a good time.
Easy to get a cab out of there, too.
And the final one comes from our very own vacationing Marty Garrett, who says, my vote goes with the bar on Coruscant. There's a dance floor, a lot more people, and the shadiest deal is about Death Sticks. In the cantina, a simple coin can clean up the mess, and death seems a common occurrence. I'd rather dance than die.
If you've ever seen Maude do karaoke, you know that's why she took that.
And then she asked, does the bar on Coruscant remind anyone else of the clubs in Mass Effect? Activate dodgy dancing. And final part of the from the neither category, Andres Cabrera, who was we met over at the Kamikaze doing our panel. I would go with neither. I would go home and rethink my life.
Oh, Andres. Nicely
see what
done.
He did there. So this week, what we're going to be putting out for here, it's going to be, I think this is going to be one of our more heated debates we've ever had. The Duel of Fates this week is, what is the more embarrassing defeat? The Trade Federation losing to the Gungans or the Empire losing to the Ewoks? This is the Battle of Naboo and the Battle of Endor. Now, here's some things we were talking about earlier. Both incorporate, there's space battles that are incorporated into the factor here.
Right.
Things that happen in space. And the Ewoks, yeah, they do have the rebels on their side, and the Gungans also have kind of the Naboo on their side as well. But let's just try to focus as best we can. There are other factors. Would you rather, is it more embarrassing that your army loses to the Gungans who come out of the swamps going, yeah, Misa, or the Ewoks who really all they wanted to do was eat Han Solo?
Swamp idiots or teddy bears? Who is it going to be? The Care Bear stare, you know.
I put it to you, Mike, take a shot. Who do you go with?
God, it's a tough one, but I feel like the Trade Federation, their droids weren't really meant for that sort of thing. Mm. And it was an unknown quantity dealing with the Aqua people coming out. You know, yeah, they didn't know what kind of weapons they had, what they were doing, you know, so they weren't really ready for that sort of fight, you know. And no one, I don't care, the best military strategist in the world is not ready for a kid stealing a vehicle and blowing up your main
communication. Now, this is what communication I call pod system. Racing.
Yeah, no one is prepared for that, you know. So it wasn't really their fault that they lost.
You know, in the war room, like, all right, let's get our forces together. Do we have a plan for a 7-year-old?
Yeah. Everyone is like, get him out of the room. That man is stupid.
And then, send him to the ventilation shaft.
Yeah. And, like, so they just weren't prepared. They were prepared to take Naboo. And they were like, that's right, all we have to deal with. And then it was like, all of a sudden, fish dudes, sea monkeys come running out of nowhere. And they're like, what the hell is this?
That's an excellent point, because you up know, till then, the Naboo and the Gungans weren't working together.
Right.
We should not want to work with a Naboo.
Yeah.
So, and then the Naboo only had a volunteer security team.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of, like, old guys going,
yeah, they were like, yeah, we got this.
I'll grab a bucket.
Yeah. Like, you know, this is not a problem. One of them's dressed like Mario. We're set. We, you know,
we got this.
But then, like, the Empire, they were an established force, right, to be reckoned with. They, like, they had dominance over the galaxy.
Right.
And teddy bears killed them with spears. That's, to me, that's demoralizing. That's as bad as it gets.
It's tough to go to the bar afterwards.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, we took a loss, but it was a good game out there.
Yeah. It's like, the, you know, the first Death Star, that, you know... Fine. They weren't ready.
That's
for
the most
that.
Embarrassing of any of them.
You know,
that's the most embarrassing event. You're literally 2 meters away.
Took 21,
from total 21 universe
years
domination.
To build. 21 years to build the first Death Star. It's gone in an instant because of an exhaust port.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, no welders on the team going to put up a patch over that, you know.
Well, we got that part in, but we can't make it happen until Thursday. So.
Where do you come in, Alex?
You know how to put together a good panel, Kenny, because yeah, I am in total disagreement with Mr. Black over here, and I will tell you why, is because the Trade Federation is the more embarrassing loss, because the Gungans were, they had warlike qualities about them already. They seemed like they knew how to fight, they knew how to stick together. Plus, you have the two bravest Jedi on there that are being distracted by Darth Maul the whole time, so they can't get involved in any of this other stuff going on. Plus, the fact that literally a 7-year-old kid is the entire team in outer space. At least in Return of the Jedi, there was a lot of contributing factors to them out there. So that I kind of give that, like, the Empire, that could have gone either way. Now, when you're talking about the forest moon of Endor, that was kind of like the Empire's Vietnam.
Yeah.
Okay, because it was an
never
unfamiliar
get into a land war
terrain.
In Southeast Asia.
They got into it, then that's like the jungle, and they just didn't know how to, like, you know, get on the terrain. It was a weird thing. The Ewoks knew that.
Yeah. But your main base, your main hub for your Death Star, you're going to put in Vietnam that you don't know anything about?
Because they didn't know that there was any indigenous creatures that had spears or knew how to braid hair.
That's the hubris of the Emperor. He's like, yeah, we got this. We are the only Imperial army in the galaxy, we're good.
Yeah, plus, and I mean, they were working with the new Death Star, not the old classic Death Star.
Yeah.
This new Death Star was like, yeah, this is Coke 2, and it hasn't even been finished yet. It's like, well, we got some carbonation, and that it fizzes. Yeah. That's
and
all
again,
we can do.
Again, speaking to the arrogance of the Emperor, I mean, even towards the end, he's telling Luke, you're a pitiful little band. Like, he just thinks that some guys are like, hey, you guys want to go fight the Empire? Yeah, let's do it, man.
Yeah,
you
it's know? Not an Old West posse, okay? Yeah. We got a lot of people.
You and your hippies have no effect on us.
You guys want to go have a sit-in over there at the shield generator, man? Like, and the Empire's, or the Rebels actually have a fleet, and then you add in these
I remember furries. Being young with your dancing and your rock and roll.
It's Han and Chewie with a guitar just singing End This Senseless War.
Yeah, so you're saying it's more embarrassing to lose to the Gungans then?
Absolutely. Okay. 100%.
And the Ewoks, they're fierce, they're warlike,
just
when they need
to.
They're
cute. Cute things can also be fierce. Look at Tony Parker. You know, adorable things can also be really, really warlike when they have to be.
I'm saying, for my vote, I'm going to...
Break the tie here, Ken.
I'm going to go, it's close, and I knew this would be a fun one, and I know out there on Twitter, don't forget to join the conversation at Jedi Alliance SK, and on the Facebook page, where we'll post this up after the show. I'm going to go, in a close one, I'm going to go with the Gungans.
Yeah.
I knew it.
JT, if you could bring up the one that picture right there. When you lose a battle...
The secret weapon.
When you lose a battle to this guy, hey, Judge, use the blue ball! And he doesn't even know what it is, and he... He trips and flips and flops and a whole...
Single-handedly kills 20 of them with sheer stupidity.
Right here, and if you're on iTunes, I'm putting the scene where Jar Jar trips and ends up... he tries to hide, and he goes under the carrying case or the carrying trailer of all the blue balls, which is one way to win a war.
Yeah, and just defeating them with blue balls is not a good thing either.
I think at one point Rick McCallum told George, hey, your primary weapon is blue balls. You're giving the audience the...
understand.
No? Okay. I think to me that's the most embarrassing. Look, the Gungans knew how to fight, so it's not embarrassing to lose to them. I agree with Mike. That's an excellent point. Mm-hmm. When they came out of the jungle, which was, by the way, the best part of that trailer.
Yeah.
When they came
out of the jungle, it was like, oh, wait, what do we got here? They're Team Boss Nass and his guys are teaming up. The Ewoks, they knew about the Ewoks. Empire knew about. They knew they had some danger.
They're like, there's some tree houses down there, and that's about it. I think we're fine. Yeah. we'll just land there.
But to lose here on those fields when you've got this
on
hapless...
those blue ball splattered fields.
Yeah, that's what I say. It's the most embarrassing defeat. So we're going to put it out there to you.
Yeah,
again.
That picture does make an excellent point.
Yeah,
that ought to be the recruiting poster for the Gungans. Are you a complete idiot? The Gungans want you.
You got an idiot on the ground, then you have an idiot in outer space, because I don't care how many midichlorians the kid has in him. He's 7. You should not lose to Kevin McAllister in an outer space battle.
Yeah, that's right. When he's in that ship, he doesn't even know what he's shooting. He's like, let's just try buttons. Wizard. That's that. Again, we put it out there to you guys on Facebook. It will be the primary debating point, but you can also put it on our YouTube page on the Popcorn Talk Network's page. This week on the Schmoes No Podcast page, the conversation will be in multi areas, but it is, again, who is the bigger embarrassing defeat? What is the bigger embarrassing defeat? The Trade Federation losing to the Gungans or the Empire losing to those cuddly little Ewoks? We'll put it out to you there, and we'll read the note next week. And a small note, too, we did pass this past week over 2,000 likes on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
A humble number, and we hope only gets bigger, but Maude and I are so thrilled for your continued support through these first 15, now 16 episodes out there, whether you be from Schmoville or the new Popcorn Talk audience or just your Star Wars fan that stumbles through and finds us. We love having you guys joining us to celebrate the greatest saga ever told, and we're going to put together probably another call-in episode where we take your calls in celebration of reaching that milestone of 2,000 likes.
You know who the 2000th liker was? It was actually Jar Jar. He tripped and he just hit a button on his computer and he ended up liking it.
So that's that. We're going to do here what we came to talk about today, too, is I want to do a special Force Don. A fan out there tweeted the Jedi Alliance page, and his name is Lee Solutionary, is what he calls himself on Twitter. And he had a great point. He just asked kind of simply, why doesn't Lando get more credit? He ran Cloud City. He destroyed the second Death Star. Yeah, he had Wedge, and he had a whole co-pilot, Neenum, and the whole crew. But he flew that Millennium Falcon into that superstructure, that big ship, and despite Lucas possibly wanting to end him, he shot out of there, celebrated. He took it down. He obviously had a good reputation because people talked about his maneuvers at the Battle of Tanab. Lando is a little bit the unsung hero of the rebellion, and I agree. I've always said Lando's one of my favorite characters, so I wanted to take a moment with two of the greatest Star Wars fans I know to give Lando some credit. I also we can go as in the terms of wrestling, we can go kayfabe and keep storyline, but I also want to break that a little bit and talk about just I mentioned it. I think episode 2 or 3 here in Jedi Alliance. One of the reasons Lando is one of my favorite characters is you got Yoda. But the success of Empire had a lot to do with Lando Calrissian and Billy Dee Williams as Lando, because as you expand the universe and go to a sequel, and that is the best sequel of all time by many, you have to have new characters that supplement the main and move the story forward. And Lando, to me, knocks it out of the park.
And he's interesting too, because he's not just another cookie cutter good guy that's just going to help the rebellion. He had corporate like breathing down his neck saying this, and so they're offering the deal, and he's trying to keep his friendship, and he's trying to do all these other things. So he's got a lot going on. He's not just hey, you can hang out at our base and I might try to sleep with Leia, but nah, it's cool. I don't have to.
Right.
You know, my problem with and this goes back to the plot hole thing too. My problem is not with Lando Calrissian himself, because I think he's a good dude and he helped us out by destroying the second Death Star, okay?
Yeah.
My problem is with whoever put him in charge of that operation, because you cannot forget that this is the guy that sold out Han Solo. I know it wasn't his fault, but this is not that long ago that he got Han Solo encased in carbonite because he had a deal with the Empire. Now we're going
to
send this
guy to save all of his people.
To lead.
But I think that's the point.
He had to save all of Cloud City. It wasn't just his old buddy. He's now, like, responsible for this entire city.
And so now we're going to put him in charge of the assault against the Empire?
Because he got Han frozen, but he didn't get him killed.
Yeah.
And he also put that device on the side of it so they could find him and thaw him out later.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just, it wasn't like he wasn't thinking about him and trying to help him out. I don't like that he stole his clothes when he went to in Return of the Jedi.
I've always argued.
That's a nice outfit.
That's one of the great points.
I'm wearing that when we destroy the second Death
Star. The end of Empire. Well, even as a kid, you're like, is he wearing Han's vest? I guess it just comes with the Falcon.
Yeah.
It's like would you like to buy this?
Cool.
Would you like to buy this Carillion cruiser? You also get this vest with purchase.
There's a dress code to get into the cockpit.
Right.
You gotta have a white shirt.
But what I liked about Lando too, you mentioned it. For me, he had to make a deal that he had no. It was either
The Empire's coming. Anyway.
He was wiped out.
Absolutely.
You know, I know,
absolutely,
but I agree with your point.
Yeah.
It's one of those fun things is, someone was like, wait a minute, you got Han captured, right? And you were friends with Darth Vader?
Yeah,
but what about my maneuvers at the Battle of Tanab? You're hired. Like, I get it.
At the very least, can we not pair him with Neenum who speaks fish? Like can we at least get the two guys that speak the same language?
Right.
I don't want a language barrier hampering this operation.
But Lando is also the first to go into Jabba the Hutt's palace.
Yeah.
He goes in, he puts on that mask.
Deep cover
he is Serpico, baby.
He had to have been there a month at least.
Right? He had to know where the bathroom was.
And that really is the first point in Return of the Jedi when you realize that we got a chance of getting Han out of this thing, because you see this bounty hunter walk in and it's got Chewbacca. Yeah. And now Chewbacca's captured too?
Yeah.
This is just getting worse and worse. We don't know where Luke is. We saw hologram. We haven't seen him yet.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see Lando and he pulls the thing down. We're like, wait a minute. We got a guy on the inside.
Yeah,
we could pull this off.
Absolutely, and that's why I think Lando's storyline. There's so much to that, and for him to, we're looking at the picture of him flying that Falcon through the superstructure. That is a hard tactical decision.
Yeah,
to take that big clunky ship and go into those tunnels.
Yeah, and you're over on one side of that big clunky ship, navigating the whole thing through it. Yeah,
Do you think there was like some rebels strapped into the plane, the chessboard during the whole time? Like, waiting? I don't know. But that, and then again, he goes from scoundrel to he grows up and takes a corporate job, which I think you need credit for too. And he's the administrator of the facility. It seems like his people loved him.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that was key too.
And he really really was trying to look out for the maximum amount of people that he could, you know.
Yeah.
Even the guy with the snow cone maker, he was trying to get him out of there.
Right.
You know, everyone involved. You know. He was trying to save everybody.
Now, to your point, I will say that it doesn't surprise me how good he is flying the Millennium Falcon, because he's flown that ship a lot before.
He
lost that to Han in a card game. So he knows how to maneuver that thing. That's like that first, you know, beat up Honda Civic you get when you're 16 that you inherit. You know, that's like that Plymouth station wagon that you're like, I know nobody else knows how to drive this, but I can drive this thing. My other point was that I got a question.
Yeah.
The Lando's second in command, the bald guy with the cell phone.
Lobot.
Yeah. Is that thing always on, or can he turn that? Because at one point Lando's like trying to and the guy's like sleeping. He's like taking a nap, and he wakes up like, oh god, I got to go back to work. Like, does he ever get a night's rest,
what
or is
he
always?
I'll tell you, we're going to be doing I'm tipping my hand a little bit. In a couple weeks, we'll be doing a duel of fates on who is the better assistant, Bib Fortuna or Lobot. That's going to be one of the ones.
Oh, he's got to be Lobot.
And Lobot gets some early points because he's always available. He's plugged into the computer system.
The guy sleeping never complains.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and it's a human. If you read the backstory on Lobot, the character, he's just plugged into the cloud. Yeah. He's like R2. He's
a walking genius bar.
Yeah.
He's just wandering around, just waiting for stuff to happen.
He can fix JT's computer.
What's wrong in here? Fine, I'll fix it.
He can download the right size JPEGs for me to put up in the background.
And you know Bib Fortuna always was going up to Jabba every Friday. Can I get a few friends on the guest list? He's like, look, not on a weekend night.
But to take it back to Lando, I think too, growing up, let's be honest, he is really the only a character of any kind of non-white makeup there, unless the aliens. Yeah. Growing up, Luke was the hero. Han was the hero.
Unless we're counting the stormtroopers, which is retroactive. You know.
That's true. There could be a little bit of play on that, too, is that growing up, we just, you know, he was the black guy, and maybe my black friend might have liked him. And I think that some of that factors in growing up, and as times change and we want more diversity in our cast and our character. We saw what happened with Ep 7, where people were like, no, we don't want just these old British guys. We want some more diversity. Lando was the first one to break through that too in the space universe.
Yeah.
And I think as long as a wait as it was for fans of the universe from 1980 to 1983 to wonder if Darth Vader was really Luke's father or it was a ruse, it was a longer wait for black people to be like, wait, is Lando going to be a good guy? Please tell me he's going to be a good guy at the end of this thing.
But that was one of my favorite moments. Again, I go back to when I was a kid watching seven, 8 years old, watching when that moment when Chewie's choking him and he's like, we could save Han. I literally was like, I know it. He's like,
I was like learn how to pronounce your friend's name.
That's true.
Not Han. It's clearly Han.
Got to save Han.
Yeah. But I just love seeing Lando for the first time. I love seeing how cool he was. I love the relationship that he had with Han when it's a relationship you have with your old college buddies. You know, you give each other a lot of crap and it's like,
you doing, Mug Black?
He kind of opened up to, like, to me, culture levels where he was the classiest guy in the galaxy as far as I was concerned. And I thought, okay, they haven't shown us Coruscant yet, but I bet everyone there is closer to him than him to all the people we've seen so far, you know?
And again, to go back to your point, too, I know you're probably half having fun with it, too, but the fact that he did make that deal and he knew he had to correct it, not just there. He put the tracking device on hands, carbon freeze. He's the first to go in. He's going to, unlike Han, who took the money and ran and New Hope and decided, all right.
Yeah.
Lando's like, I'll lead it.
From Lando's perspective, I love that mentality of, no, I need to be the guy to redeem myself and my and I'm going to take care of this thing for you guys. From a rebellion standpoint, I know you have limited options, maybe not the best call, but it worked out okay in the end.
I'm sure there was a debate between, like, Mon Mothma, Crix Maydeen, Akbar, all sitting around going, but wait, no, this is the guy from Cloud City? I don't know.
It's a trap.
Anytime you do a Star Wars podcast, comedians cannot wait to get that It's a Trap in. Yeah. And me and Mike Black tied.
As it should be. And, you know, I'll be honest, I kind of ran out of time this weekend with my busy life. I was going to research a little bit more of the Battle of Tanab because I myself wanted to find out what the hell.
Various maneuvers.
What went down on Tanab.
Dude, let me tell you, that little maneuver that he pulled was after the battle at the bar that night.
That's what I always wanted.
Hey, can I buy you a Colt 45?
Yeah, someone must have. That Twi'lek sister team there, huh? Someone must have told me about maneuvers there, but Lando is to me as much as part of the Star Wars saga as any other character. I was very excited to learn that he'll be back in Ep 7, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he'll be there.
Oh, very nice.
Right? I mean, I heard, am I wrong?
I just hadn't heard it yet.
That he's there. And then more importantly, that he's, not more importantly, but more coming up sooner, he's in Rebels.
I was happy to see him in the Lego game.
And he was in the Lego movie, yeah.
You know. Yeah. But he's in Rebels, and that means that he's ingrained. He's part of this.
He's still the best Harvey Dent I've ever seen in a Batman movie.
That's true.
Absolutely.
I would love to have seen his take on Two-Face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would have been really interesting to watch.
Maybe an abortion, judging by how that franchise went downhill.
Yeah.
If it's Tim Burton's Two-Face, okay. If it was Joel Schumacher's Two-Face,
yeah,
I'm glad Billy Dee got out of that.
So that's our quick look on Lando Calrissian. We could spend a long time talking about. We could spend a long time talking about everything here because we love Star Wars. But I want you guys out there to pay your respects and honor to Lando Calrissian by joining us on the Facebook page to talk about Lando. What was things about Lando that you like? What does he deserve credit for that maybe he doesn't get credit for? Understanding Ninnam might be one of those. that might be a harder language to understand than Wookiee.
I didn't know he spoke fish, but he does.
He does. You know who else was in Batman from Star Wars?
Porkins.
Porkins.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jack Porkins.
Yeah. Was he Eckhart?
He was Eckhart.
Wow. Yeah. Think about the future. Think about the past.
William Hookins.
Wow.
So that's our take on Lando. That's our take on the Star Wars. We could go. I'm always disappointed we have to end this because I want to. We could get into more military battle debates.
Yeah,
the three of us. We might have to do a episode of Jedi Alliance just devoted to Imperial battle tactics.
Yeah, we've seen the battles now with these individual spin-off movies that they're going to have. Maybe we just get one of those strategy movies, you know, where it's just let's get a Valkyrie, let's just plan out this rebel attack,
let's get like a Gettysburg or Gods and Generals type of version, just
a movie just called Lando's Maneuvers. I would go see that.
That'd be a great reality show. Instead of like The Bachelor, Lando's Maneuvers. I totally would pay for that. So before we leave, like we do, as always, we like to pay tribute to a fallen character from the Star Wars universe. Sometimes it can be a character, sometimes it's a notion, or sometimes it's a droid, like the Imperial probe droid we paid homage to a while back. But today, we're going to pay tribute to, well, here's who it is. If you're going to die, make it count. That's the theme of today's In Memory. The legendary Battle of Endor had two distinct sides, the ground assault on the shield generator and the epic space battle between the Imperial Navy and the ragtag rebel fleet. History shows that the rebellion won that day, but that might not have happened if not for one rebel pilot named Arvel Krynid. No, that's not the name of a rebel accountant. It's the name of an A-wing pilot whose final act changed the course of battle. The rebel fleet was pinned, or some would say trapped, between the fully armed and operational Second Death Star and the Imperial Navy's dreaded Star Destroyers led by the Super Star Destroyer Executor. The rebels knew that they had to take out Vader's flagship, so they concentrated all firepower on the Executor. A group of fighters had begun a strafing run of the ship when a laser bolt struck the side of Arvel Krynid's A-Wing, sending it into a spin. But the skillful pilot let out a scream and managed to control his ship just enough to send it crashing to the control bridge of the Empire's grand ship. The command staff was killed, including Piet. The controls lost, and the ship crashed into the side of the second Death Star. The tide of the battle had been turned. Arvel Krynid was posthumously awarded the New Republic Medal of Bravery, and as we learned while reading Heir to the Empire, the Krynid Award was later established to honor brave pilots of the Republic. Arvel Krynid changed the course of the rebellion. One pilot, one ship, one sacrifice. Rest in peace, Arvel Krynid.
Beautifully said, Kenny, and one Cadillac, too. There was the body of a Cadillac that they used during Return of the Jedi to actually penetrate that. Yeah.
Perfect. So that has been this week's Jedi Alliance. You can, of course, again, follow along as we change over full-time to the Popcorn Talk Network. Go to youtube.com/popcorntalk and find all the episodes there, not just with us, but with profiles and guilty movie pleasures, Meet the Movie Press, Anatomy of the Movie moves over there, too. And don't forget Marvel News, DC News, which is our newest show. And don't forget the main show, which is the Schmoes Know Movie Show, which can be found live, if you like it, 6 p.m. PST every Thursday night, as I'm joined with this man. And another cast of characters.
Because guess who's back this Thursday?
And guess who's back?
This guy, I'm back on the live show this Thursday, and like Ken said, make sure you guys subscribe to the Popcorn Talk Network on YouTube. It's going to be your future home for all the schmo shows you know and love.
And of course, don't forget, we are still on iTunes. That is a very viable and powerful side of the Jedi Alliance, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe if you haven't on iTunes. And this week on the main show, we'll be talking about superhero movies, we've been talking about comedies, our favorite science fiction movies, all that. We've been having a lot of fun over there on the main show. And try to catch it live if you can, 6 p.m. PST, because that is a lot of fun. Mike Black, thank you so much for being our toy expert and returning.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
And when you're not looking, I'm going to take the Boba Fett Black series after the show. Mike, where can they find you on Twitter?
At Mike Black Attack for that and for Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, you hear that? You get that? He has an Instagram account now. No.
Mike Black Attack, I will remember in the future. And he's also one of the funniest comedians you'll ever see when you see Mike Black.
Absolutely. Live. True. Maybe on Absolutely. A Friday night, go out to the Comedy Store bar on the patio there, and this man will say, I don't like you.
Yeah. It's the closest thing that we have on Earth to the Mos Eisley Cantina is the Comedy Store
that
front
bar.
That
is very true.
Ellis, of course, don't forget to find him on Twitter.
That's right. At 5150 Ellis, and more importantly, at Schmoes Know, and make sure you guys subscribe to our channel, Schmoes Know and Popcorn Talk.
Absolutely. Maude will be back next week, and follow her on Twitter at Maude Garrett, me at Ken Napsuck, and the show at Jedi Alliance SK. And I'll see you Thursday on the Schmoes Know main show live, 6 p.m. PST. Thank you so much for listening. JT in the booth, thank you. That is it. This has been the Jedi Alliance. Thank you for listening, because many Bothans died to bring us this information.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.